Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP. That's 1-800-639-8783. Or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Nick DiPaola, and I'm this week's guest on the Kicks and Shit Show. Check it out.
What's good, everybody? It's your boy Gerard, your girl Gabby. We are back. Episode 48 of the Kicks and Shit Show.
I feel like I should get a stopwatch out. I know that like we're kind of like going on this vibe where I'm letting you rock out.
Yeah. Listen, sometimes you just gotta kind of like roll with it, right? Kind of just let me go, let the pipes just, you know, it's a lovely thing. Look,
I mean, that's been trending for a little while now. I don't know if you know, this is not the first episode that I've just, to quote the great poet Elsa, let it go.
Elsa.
It's still one of those days, Gerard. You know, that's what's going on in these streets.
I didn't even ask you what's going on in these streets yet. It looks really like Elsa, like it's frozen. It's spring out here. Spring is springing. It's trying to spring.
Bike short season is in full effect, y'all.
You may or may not have been in a beach town recently. You want to talk about that or no?
I may or may not have been in bike shorts in said beach town recently as well.
With ankle weights?
I actually did use ankle weights. And let me tell you, you know what the best part about that was? Is I had my ankle weights and I showed up and there were other sets of ankle weights in the house.
Oh.
I did not layer them. No, they were not all for me. But there was a little bit of an ankle weights workout party there. So,
and let me tell you, folks, what a house it was. What a house it was. But that's all. I'm just going to leave it there. I don't want to put all your business.
Just leave that there, Drac. Okay? Drac always tried to air out my... No. I have clean laundry. I don't have a big pile of dirty laundry pulling up. So I just want to clarify my, like, you know the chair where you put the clean laundry before it goes away?
Yes.
That's what Drac wants to know. Everything that's on the chair.
Listen, it's just... You know, far be it from, why is it so problematic that I am so concerned about your well-being or very into what you're doing? I mean, it's, you know, nothing wrong with that.
That's what friends do. I love the publicist spin that you just put on that. I am concerned about your well-being. You asking if there were ankle weights in said house shows the real concern about my well-being. You don't ask me how I got there. Did I drive? Was I safe? Did I quarantine? No. Were there ankle weights was the question. On record, there was no conversation about this before we started recording, folks. I just want to clarify
I also want to clarify that when I realized she was at said beach house in Beach Town, I said to her, oh, what's going on here? And the immediate thing was quarantine, social distance. She knew the questions were coming. So you already put that out there. So don't act like I don't ask about those things and care about your well-being, because I actually do.
I know you do. I'm not saying you don't care. I'm just saying, like, let's not get it twisted, y'all, okay? Like, Gerard, the first question was ankle weights. Okay? That has nothing to do with you caring about my well-being. I know you care, Gerard. You are a man of the people, a man of the ladies.
See? There you go.
You know, and you are always appreciated, trust me. Ooh, but, you know, yeah. If we didn't banter and I didn't give you a hard time, we wouldn't be doing what we do. Am I right or am I right?
Your
only answer is right.
Right. You are always right.
Not always. I'll put a little asterisk. Oh, like 90% of the time, you know. Virgos admit when we're wrong.
Do Virgos admit when they're wrong?
We do, but you don't hear it very often because we're almost never wrong.
Yeah. See,
that's the asterisk.
There's the caveat, folks.
A little right there. That's that asterisk. So, Gerard, how are you doing in the streets?
Well, as I said, spring has sprung, so that's wonderful. It's nice that we're, like... I don't think it's quite put away the winter coat season yet. I think we might have a day or two here where it might get a little crazy, but we're just about there. So that's exciting. We got about 20-something games left in the NBA season, so playoffs are coming up. I know you're exciting because your squad, I'm telling you, you guys are going to be in there. So that's a wonderful thing. You know, if you continue on this path.
I was going to say, we got to be careful.
Yeah. If you continue on the path you are, you should be in there. The other thing that's also interesting is, I experienced some sneaker W's and L's this week. So, I know you're like...
I feel like you need a sound effect. Can you drop in some sound effect that, like, illustrates surprise, shock?
It's the sirens, like, air horns, all that. Yeah,
anything.
Put that in right there.
Fanfare sound effect, yeah.
So you know, one of my favorite releases were the undefeated Nike Kobe 4 Protro collaboration. And remember when they came out last year, I was like, all right, fuck, didn't get them, whatever. You know, shit happens. I ain't getting mad. It is what it is. And the undefeated re-released, right, for this year. And I was like, all right, I'm going to try to get them. I'm like, I'm going to legit. And you know my thing was, Gabby, I said to you, I was like, all right, if I have to buy the whole freaking pack, I'm not doing it because I'm not buying four pairs of these. But if I can pick which one I want, because there were some colorways that I was like, I don't know, like, you know, the teal, I was like, that's not really me, whatever. I was going for the Hunter green, right? That really super dark green one. I kind of like those.
The one that matches the outfit that you're rocking today.
Exactly.
Beautiful.
So I'm like, all right, get in there. So when you get on the undefeated site, you have to log in. I log in. They're like, oh, put in the right path, or, you know, just create an account. Da, da, da. I do all that, whatever. Okay, here's your place in line. What shoe do you want? Green, size, don't refresh. Okay, nothing, cool. So I'm just sitting there, minding my own business, you know, on my phone, doing some other work while it's happening. And then I see, oh, time to check out, sir. Please enter your credentials. I'm like, I'm already logged in, though. What do you mean, enter my credentials? Like, we already did that. I'm like, all right, okay, let me just put it in again. Oh, no, sir, that's not your password. I go, what do you mean that's not my password? we just did this, like, at the beginning of this whole process. So then it's like, this, and it's like, oh, my God. And, of course, you know, if you have to hit the redo your password.
Automatically start over, TKO.
Done.
Not going to happen.
And yep. I was just like, so I sat there, I was like, okay. Because you know my big thing is, do I feel the process is fair and legitimate? So it wasn't a bot thing in this particular instance, although maybe it was. I don't know. But it's like, if I already put the password and everything in initially just to start, why do, when I re-enter the same exact password that I just did, you are saying that's not your password? Like, I'm just like, I'm very confused. And it was just a very unfortunate situation. And I was like, oh, well, this is not great. But, I wasn't like, you know, super like, oh, this is terrible. Like, I want to, like, you know, do whatever and post L's on, you know. But I thought that this drop and release would be a little better than most of the stuff that we see. And seemingly it was, but there was some glitch somewhere in the passwording process. And the thing is, I don't know what the glitch was, right? Because as I said, when I started, I already put the stuff in and you accepted the password I put in initially. So I don't understand why when I did it the second time, it wasn't the password. And it wasn't like I typed it in wrong. Like, I was very clear, like, show, like, no, it was the right thing. So it was just very weird.
Gerard, most people I would ask if they put the password in wrong, I know that you did not, and I feel your pain. That would make my blood boil from the inside out. It would be spilling all over the computer screen right now. My blood would be boiling so much. Yeah, and you're also a more tolerant human than I am.
Yes, I was like, you know what? All right. I was like, it wasn't meant to be. You know, our guest, our last week's guest, Wells P, really kind of, his whole Zen idea of like, I value my peace and my sanity. So, and I was like, okay, you know what? Instead of me freaking out and wiling because I didn't get these, wasn't meant to be, you know? Hey, and I'm not a huge Kobe guy anyway. I just like the Protros. I think that's of his shoes, that's my favorite one. So I was like, all right, we'll see if I can get them. Look, I'm sure there'll be another opportunity again for something else. I'll try. If I get them, I get them. If I don't, I don't. But,
and if it's something you really want, you can head over to our friends at Another Lane. You can go to eBay.
Exactly.
You can look at some of our other retail friends. Like,
exactly.
You can get our girl Dolly a call.
Exactly.
Speakers.
Exactly.
You know some people. You
exactly.
Got the plug. If you want to make that happen.
I can totally do it. So,
you can make it happen.
So I'm not like, you know, but I did get it. I mean, it was a win, but.
So, every W is a W, even if it's like for the Monarch.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a Monarch, but Nike Air Max 90 in University of Michigan colors. And I was like, you know, not that I'm a, you know, hail to the victors kind of guy. I mean, I don't dislike Michigan. It's just kind of like, oh, whatever. Michigan's Michigan. I like those colors, though. That blue and that gold is, you know, I often have like navy blue, you know, joggers that I wear, or I often have like gold hoodies. I'm like, you know what? These would be nice with some things that I own. So I was like, you know what? Let me take this win and grab these pair of Nike Air Max 90 in the Michigan colorway. So I was like, that's what I did. So I grabbed those.
Sherrod, yeah. I think, you know what we should do? I think we should take a poll for our followers and listeners. Are you guys liking Gerard's new series of fit pics that we've been posting? I have tasked Gerard with some homework, and he has been delivering. He's an A-plus student. Love seeing the comments that you guys have. I especially love the one about Yeezy season when I think our former guest Ben said Yeezy season hasn't been a season since 2016, which
Ben,
I asked just
Ben Wilding.
2017.
Yeah, but, he's wild.
You know, we appreciate the dialogue. That's what it's about, though, right? If you can't make fun of your friends, then who can you make fun
exactly.
of?
Exactly. But yes. So, folks, perhaps in some of these next Fit Picks, I will rock those Air Max 90 Michigans and some other things in pictures soon to come. But, Gabby, we got something dope coming up. A special guest. I mean, every guest is special. But this is someone that covers the sneaker industry. He's on ESPN on all over those platforms. He is going to be a host of a new show on The Boardroom coming soon. And that's all the teases you're going to get. So stay tuned, guys. What's good, everybody? We are back. Gabby, we're not alone. We are joined by someone who covers the sneaker biz, the whole sneaker industry, shoe contracts. He is a sneakerhead, and he is soon to be the host of an upcoming show on The Boardroom called The Sneaker Game. It is Nick DiPaola. Nick, what's up, man?
Hey, thanks for having me. Good timing, too, because I believe The Sneaker Game show is literally kicking off next week. So,
I mean, listen, I'm not going to act like we knew that was the timing. But
I mean, this was intentional. Thanks, universe.
And obviously, it shouldn't be hard to guess who the first guest is. So, you know, once KD's back on the floor, I think the episode will be up right in tandem. So it should be exciting.
I was going to say, sounds like you might have a good first guest, given that is the boardroom.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, speaking of, since you already went there, and you probably have to say it because he's your boss now, but do you honestly like the KD silhouette?
I mean, to me, the KD 2 is the top five shoe I ever played in.
Wow.
And I think they were an $88 shoe, which
yeah.
I asked him about that a while back and why the shoes went from $88 to
100 and whatever.
I think
yeah.
the 8 was 185. Mm-hmm. And it's probably one of the best interview answers I ever got. He said, well, I'm not an $88 not player.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
He kind of said that on the spot. But yeah, that KD2 to me is one of the all-time greats. And I think a lot of his stuff over the years, some people like others, you know, more than some others
yeah.
too. But I think, you know, the 8-9 were a little too similar, 8-9-10 in that run. Mm-hmm. And now they're kind of bouncing back a little bit.
They are.
But hoop wise, they've all been great hooping.
I love the Olympic. Oh, what are they, nines? Was that the year the nines came out? The white, the red and blue, I like those. You know my favorite, the 13s, the Scrooge McDuck PEs, which of course, like,
there's only 13s are your favorite.
Well, because
the 13s are so comfortable too.
But just that one though, the Scrooge McDuck PE, that particular one, which of course is only a one of one, so I ain't never getting those. But I really like those.
The four is obviously the best. Come
on. I mean, I'm a big fan of the sevens.
I like the sevens. I actually cut the strap off my sevens.
See, it's the strap. How are you feeling about the strap? That's the thing for me. It's like sometimes I'm like, other times I'm like, man, I don't want a strap. It's really, yeah, that's the
two, I don't think I cut it off the two. I always kind of tinker and mess with a lot of my sneakers I play with. And so that strap was kind of, I just cut that off. It was a little lighter. But if I had the Aunt Pearl, I would have kept it. But
the
strap was like, oh, whatever.
I'm with you. Well, Nick, I mean, obviously you hoop. You love basketball sneakers. Let's start from the beginning. When did you fall in love with sneakers?
It's easy. I was growing up in Sacramento, California. Our only pro team was the Kings.
Shouts to the Kings.
obviously, there's no reason I would have to pick stuff all throughout here otherwise. But I was one of those kids that just played everything you could think of. Like, we didn't have video games or cable growing up. My mom was pretty strict on, like, some budget stuff. And what we did have was a park down the street and, like, four other families that each had two boys. So we were playing basketball, street hockey, football, soccer, like anything you could think of. We were rollerblading, like anything, literally anything, tennis. And basketball was always the main one I loved, though. And so it started with there. And then, of course, you know, you get to about 9, 10 years old and you start to understand what the NBA is, who your favorite players are. And I think for everybody in the mid-90s growing up, shoes were just a natural extension from those players and just following, you know, Jason Kidd, Penny Hardaway, mm-hmm. and their stuff, Kevin Garnett as well, in the mid-90s just became something I was passionate about.
Yeah, and you had some characters on those Kings teams, right? You had White Chocolate, you had Peja, you had C-Web. I mean, you had some dudes on there. Vlade.
So rookie year, yeah, Vlade too, right? And then Hito and Gerald mm-hmm. Wallace, like, they were pretty stacked, And Jay Will's rookie year was my eighth grade year.
Okay.
So me and pretty much everybody that grew up in Sacramento throws like the craziest passes of all time. Just turnovers all games. Okay. Like Trey hates playing with me because Trey plays like Andre Miller. He's pretty boring as a player. He's kind of just kind of like, I always joke, call him basic game. He's pretty like unrisk. He's not a risk taker out there.
Right.
I'm throwing like full court behind the back. I'm doing whatever. It's nuts. So I remember one time I checked in, threw a behind the back turnover, and my coach like immediately pulled me out the game and out over, you know. And so that era was funny because you had, you know, number 55 in high school, the numbers were by size. Mm-hmm. So that was like the 1-3X jersey for most teams. Mm. So pretty much the shortest guy, like the point guard of every high school team in SAC, wearing a 3X. You know, people were throwing crazy passes. It was just an amazing time to be growing up in SAC at that time.
What a time to be alive. And like that for sure, because I know. And it's interesting because that era, and I was going to say, high school coaches and youth coaches around the country had to hate the Sacramento Kings and Jason Williams because of that exact reason, much like I imagine now a lot of coaches are with Steph Curry. They're like, why are you pulling up from 1,000 feet away? You cannot make that damn shot. Like,
yeah, and you had Jay Will, then you had the N1 mixtape, mm-hmm, right after, mm-hmm, and it was just kind of like this renaissance of hoop. That was an awesome time as a fan, as a player, but I'm sure every coach ever just hated it.
Oh, it is. It's the best, right? Because that's the part of being a kid, right? It's all about imitating and mimicking like your favorite players growing up, right? Because that's the whole dream, right? You go out of the yard or the park and you think, all right, this is me. I'm Jason Williams coming down the court. And I could see Nick literally like, all right, no look. And it's like, bro. Oh. Like,
I mean, we had this one power forward, Louis. I was hitting him in the face all the time. Like, it was bad. It was bad. Because, like, you know, Steve Webb could catch anything.
Right, right.
Like, Louis the power forward, he's not really catching stuff like that. But
shouts to Louis.
It was an amazing time. And, like, I think the biggest thing was just, like, basketball should be creative and fun. And I didn't want to have the ball on a triple threat and throw a bounce pass, post entry pass. Like, that's not fun. That was never fun to me. So it was all about just improvisation, seeing some shit you saw on TV the other night and trying that out. Like, I remember AI had that new move commercial.
Yep.
Which didn't actually work as a move, but we were all doing that next day when we taught, you know. So it was stuff like that, and that's what made the 90s so much fun, because it was such a, like, kind of new creativity that was taking place with the game at that time.
So what you're basically saying is you were not doing the Coach John Wooden two-hand chest pass and the George Mikan drill. That was not really – the fundamentals were not your jam.
I read John Wooden's book and the Pyramid of Success or whatever. It was cool. But like
it was cool, but nah. John Wooden, 11 ends up – nope, that shit's cool, but nope. Yeah. Tired about that life.
I got to ask, though, what was on your feet, though? There were so many good shoes in the 90s, too. Like, what were you rocking on the court?
So, growing up, I had a $40 budget in elementary and middle school. Fair. And then 50 in high school. So, I didn't have, quote-unquote, like, the newest Air Jordans or, you know, all the best shoes growing up. But I was pretty resourceful. So, back then, I had our middle school colors were green. And I should grab them, they're around here, but I had a pair of the black and green Shaken Destructs, which was Dennis Rodman's shoe. I found them for $19.99 at Ross.
Wow.
And they matched our team colors. It was like the best find ever. Like, I was literally at Ross and Marshall's probably once a week just trying to find stuff.
Nice.
And I had some Pippen 3s. I got a Big 5, which were all black. I had some Garnett 3s that were black and blue that I got for $70. Like, I remember distinctly, like, basically chipping in $20 to $30 each time to go over that budget, right. You know. But it was always stuff that was either, I don't know if you guys remember the Final Score version of East Bay.
Yep,
it was,
yep.
Like the discounts, like, mm-hmm, the old stuff. Like, mm-hmm, it was just everything along those lines. And I think the funny thing, I always tease my mom. It's like, if you would have paid $125 and got me the Penny 2s in the 6th grade, maybe that phase would have been over with. But it was... Once I got into college, where I basically realized I could link my debit card to an eBay account. And I didn't have a debit card before that, actually. So PJ Tucker says the same thing. Like, it wasn't until we were in college, because we're the same high school class.
Okay.
That we both kind of realized, like, wow, like, I could just go on eBay and buy stuff.
Pretty.
And so that's what it became for me. I was buying the Zoom Flight 95s. Oh, nice. Which to me is the best basketball shoe of all time.
That is an excellent shoe. Love that shoe. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was for me, because Jason Kidd was one of my favorite players too. I loved all the point guards that were just real creative on the floor and had great vision. Like I always played that way too. And I felt like if you get everybody involved, that's the most fun when you're playing ball. So for me, it was J. Kidd, Zoom Flight 95. That was like the shoe that got me into shoes.
Yep.
And once I got to college, I got a pair finally, because I didn't get a pair initially. But once I got to college, I went back and was buying up a bunch of old stuff.
And J. Kidd, another NorCal guy. So that's right up your alley there.
He grew up about an hour and a half from me in the Bay. So it was great kind of seeing his rise. And then when he was on the Mavs, man, it was a short Mavs run, but that was quite like he just came out the gate killing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that team, I love that team, man. The three J's, him, Jamal Mashburn, and Jim Jackson. Like, I was like, man, that team, I was like, we know all the urban legends about why they weren't good, but. look that up, kids, and you'll know what we're talking about. So you go to college. When did you start realizing, all right, man, I can turn my love for basketball and sneakers into something I can do for work? Like I can like figure out how to like be in this business and make money and do stuff.
So I distinctly remember I was on a family's summer trip in Florida, and it was the summer between seventh and eighth grade, and Slam put out the first issue of Kicks. and I have a pristine copy now that I always keep at my desk, but and I actually just wrote a story for them because they got an upcoming issue they're working on. It's kind of like a celebratory issue. And so I always joke with everybody at Slam, but I wear a rubber band on my left wrist every day since.
Nice.
To kind of tie back to KG on the cover. And that was the first time I was reading it. And I realized like, it's a whole magazine about sneakers. Maybe I could actually do that. And I think when you're a basketball player, everybody has, you know, you want to be a first round or number one pick. And, you know, I thought I was going to go to Michigan on a scholarship. And then you have that moment where you realize, like, this shit's not going to work.
Yeah, I ain't that good.
So, luckily for me, that happened at about 14 or 15.
Early, good.
I'll tell you the embarrassing version. I was going to stop there. But I got dunked on, and it was the first time in Sacramento B history that the dunk of the year wasn't a varsity dunk.
Wow.
So I knew right then, I was like, this is not going to work. And so basically from that moment on, it was, you know, the original goal was I want to work at Slam, write about sneakers at Kicks magazine. And that was kind of the starting point. And so I kind of just did all the small steps from there. I was in a bunch of like English classes, accelerated stuff in high school. I was the sports editor of the school paper. And then I knew Nike was close to Eugene. So I went to the University of Oregon to do the journalism programming with the Focus and Magazine to try to figure all that out. So that was kind of the starting point. And the fall of my freshman year in 2003 was actually when Soul Collector started.
Mm.
So while it started with the idea of working at Slam, Kicks was just once a year every August.
Mm-hmm.
And Soul Collector was six times a year in print. So that then became kind of the goal at that point. And I was able to write there when I was a junior in college, and then kind of put it all together from there.
And you went, you know, you made the strategic decision to apply to Oregon and go to Oregon, right? Just because you knew Nike's out there, and you're like, all right, like this is. Was it always when you were young? For most of our guests, we always ask, was Nike the shoe? Like, were you like, all right, I'm with these guys, and then as I get older, I add things. What, or were you always now? It was always Nike from the beginning.
No, I was actually like super open-minded. So I always thought the best thing in the 90s was you had, you know, Grant Hill and Stack at Fila, you had Kobe at Adidas and AI and Shaq and Sean Reebok. Kemp, you know, were at Reebok. So I was super like open-ended on stuff. And One was at that time really, really coming up too. And then you had a lot of kind of just like other random brands, you know, doing exciting stuff too. So I was always super open-minded. I think that's probably a good foundation to have for what I do now, and that's always been something that has kind of helped in my lane too. I think obviously everybody's favorite within that is Nike, but you know, the Alpha Project, a lot of the Flight, a lot of the Zoom stuff was always my favorite stuff growing up. But and I had a lot of players that I looked up to that were with Nike, but I liked and respected all of the stuff out there, and it was a fun time to be growing up. I will say I visited. So let's see, the summer before my junior year of high school, we visited Eugene, and it was like in June, amazing. And so I'm like, I want to come to Eugene. This is a great place. And my freshman year was the worst winter in 40 years, and I had no idea weather-wise what I was getting into. But You know, had I visited in like December, maybe I wouldn't have wanted to go there. But,
that's why they don't have you visit in December.
I know, right? Yeah, so I think everybody, you know, you think of Nike as this like mythical place, and it's kind of gray and rainy out here all the time, but it is pretty awesome, and just seeing like how the campus has grown since then and what they've all been able to pull off is pretty cool.
What do you think? I know you talk about all the different brands and the different players that are working on different brands. What are you liking today that, you know, is beyond the Nike and the Jordan?
It's an exciting time because you're kind of seeing a renaissance of obviously like Puma and New Balance coming back around. There's all the Chinese brands as well that are, you know, most of their stuff is all in China and not really as visible here in the U.S. But from a product design standpoint, like Li Ning's doing some interesting stuff with the Wade line, and I've actually been able to go to China twice and shadow Clay Thompson for his Onta tours, which the first time was 7 cities in 9 days, which was out of control.
Yeah.
But just like seeing the scale of everything out there was pretty awesome, and kind of understanding that side of it from a basketball standpoint. I would say I'm excited to see what Adidas and Jerry Lorenzo do coming up. That'll probably still be, it sounds like, a year away or so, but. So I think that's what I'm excited to see come around. Puma with LaMelo, it sounds like they're going to give him a signature shoe. So how that looks, I'm excited to see. I think everybody's just kind of like in this stage of trying to reinvent what it is as a basketball sneaker. And, you know, obviously basketball shoes sales have been down, I think, each of the last 5 years. So seeing which brands kind of come up with a creative approach on what that really looks like, I think could be exciting as we get into the next decade here.
Yeah, this is a good lane that you brought up. Obviously, you cover the sneaker business with all the work that you do. I know you're seeing a shift, though, right, in sort of how deals are being signed from athletes and with sneaker brands. Let's talk a little bit about that and sort of how athletes are looking at their shoe deals now and what that means, because not everyone's getting a signature shoe, for sure. That's number one. Number two, you're looking at different types of partnerships, right? Guys are partnering with Crocs and like non-traditional brands, like all sorts of different sort of things, not wacky, but just different. And is that really more about, you know, these athletes coming up now are like, I want something to identify with me, or is the money cycle changing and they're looking at that? What are the different factors that are driving that?
Yeah, I was joking with a friend because they were asking how work was going. I was like, man, this was the most boring fall ever because none of the rookies were getting signed, really. So I had nothing to really report on. There was like 6 guys getting a deal. And I think a lot of that was more so just brands freezing budgets off of, you know, coronavirus impacts and things like that. 2021 class is pretty strong, so it should bounce back, I think. But I think the biggest piece is that, you know, a lot of players, let's say from 8 or 9 on the bench down, you know, I don't know if the brands are looking at those guys as being all that valuable anymore. And I think they're trying to reassess, like, are we really spending our money in an impactful way or not, you know? And so I think that's something we'll see where, unless you're like a league fits guy and you're on the end of the bench like that,
right.
You know, I don't think a lot of those kinds of players maybe are going to be getting the deals that they used to get. So you're seeing guys get creative. We had Cole Anthony and CJ McCollum do a Crocs deal. That's an interesting one because Cole's doing that since he doesn't have a shoe deal yet. And then CJ, there's a lot of kind of creative carve-outs you could do if you have a Chinese deal. So even though he's with Li Ning and has a signature with Li Ning, he's doing that Crocs deal, which was, I think, everybody got a kick out of him being the first guy to announce with Crocs. But, you know, I think everybody's trying to look at things totally differently and as the tunnel has taken off and as guys with Instagram presences have taken off, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be a basketball shoe that you're wearing in a basketball game and that's what you endorse. You know, you could have a lifestyle shoe or anything, really. And I think a lot of times, too, so many of these shoe deals, if you're getting a 25 to 50 grand deal, is it worth, you know, basically signing away all your exclusivity for all kinds of other products that a shoe deal also includes, like backpacks and just clothing and just all the other things. So I think guys are kind of looking at all that and reassessing. And I think brands are reassessing too, like who's really impactful and who should we be paying?
Yeah.
So I know Gerard mentions Crocs. I think that's just an interesting turn. I need to know, first of all, do you have any Crocs and what are your thoughts on them?
I've never owned a pair of Crocs. My boy Trey was staying with me for 4 months.
Yeah, Trey loves his Crocs.
He had like handfuls of Crocs that he's wearing to like dinner and stuff. I'm just like, dude, what are you doing? But
he's wearing them in the streets.
Okay. And he's got all the little trinkets to like, you know, sauce them up like how CJ did. And I don't know, it's not for me. I will say, I mean, they are comfortable, of course, if you're just going to kick them around. But it's such a like hideous shoe that it obviously became like a. An irony around that, just like the Air Monarch or something, but it's not for me. No offense to Crocs.
No, I totally agree with you, but I'm curious, just seeing some of the new Yeezys that are coming out, I'm like, are these inspired by, like, is this the next generation, like the Croc generation, even in some of the materials?
There's a Nike shoe, I think it's called the Gatto, and they're basically a Croc, but like a cool Croc. And I had those in the early 2010s and was wearing those around. People were clowning me too, but I thought, I mean, that was like a good execution of an injection foam shoe. And I thought there was at that time a lot of kind of runway on that. And now you're seeing, like you're saying, Yeezy do it. And Merrell has actually a fresh one too that people have been spotting and wearing. But I don't know if that whole genre is for me still, so we'll see.
I love it. You talked about obviously China as a market, and of course, because we know how basketball crazed they are over there. Is that mirroring sort of the NBA in the sense that, like, the United States market is pretty well saturated, right, in terms of NBA viewership? And, like, I don't anticipate it increasing in any large number more than what it is. You'll see stuff on the fringes and margins. I think that's the same with the shoe market, right? It's kind of like outside of, like, your number one pick in every class, it's like we're not really – you're not going to be out here getting signature guy and, like, you know, selling and moving units. And I ask because obviously Zion's kind of like this generational star, right? And Jordan Brand's going to actually give him a signature shoe. But we know that there have been challenges with Jordan Brand signature shoes, right? Outside of the actual the Jordan line, right? Russ, CP3, I mean, they're kind of like, eh. But they don't have that cachet. Like, do you think that, like, it's like, look, man, guys can go to China, do smaller deals and allow themselves to do more things. Or are you still going to have that one generational guy always, I'm doing the big deal, and then everything else will kind of follow?
Yeah, I mean, I still think the model of having that kind of landmark star is still going to be the case. I mean, you know, you have New Balance signing Kawhi and Jamal Murray, hoping he becomes that. Jalen Suggs, who's playing in the national championship game, you know, by the time this pod comes out, he'll technically be a pro. And he's going to probably get a crazy deal as well, so... I still think brands are still identifying those kind of singular guys, but obviously, like you mentioned with Jordan Brand, it's like they need a couple more variables to go right for a signature shoe to work. I think the Zion thing that we're going to see is that they're going to really target like a younger kid that looks at him as a superhero almost, versus just like, you know, the older crowd or people that are traditionally into Jordans. I think they might take a different approach with it and see how that works, but. You know, you got Luka, Tatum around the corner, obviously huge Jordan guys as well. So I'll be curious to see, like, if they give another guy a sneaker and how that goes. And it's a challenge I think everybody at Jordan Brand's aware of in terms of even with, like, the Flyweight line and the Mellow line. Yeah. You know, the first two Mellows were strong, first couple, I should say, and then line kind of shifted from there, you know. So I think everybody's aware of that, but, you know, just like we've seen them kind of revive the game shoe with the Jordan 34, I thought was a nice bounce back effort. They're going to try to have a bounce back effort on the signature stuff too, so we'll see.
Yeah, and it's interesting, right? Because you mentioned the stars that are part of the Jordan Brand family, right? Luka is a generational guy, right? I mean, Tatum plays in a big market in Boston, but it's like, I mean, a signature shoe may not actually work for them, right? Just because. They're not going to have that kind of cachet that's like, yeah, let me go out and get those Tatums. And it's.
I don't know. I think in 2 years, those guys will just continually increase their profile and have more moments. And I think both those guys, once they hit their mid-20s, they'll be the faces of the league, you know. And we're seeing, it's weird to say because I'm LeBron's age, but we're seeing LeBron and, you know, KD and that current kind of headliners in terms of signatures. You know, they're basically on the last chapter of their signature run, and we'll see who's next.
One of the things that's interesting, too, is I love the way athletes use their sneakers for bigger causes. And I know that Joe Ingles isn't a signature shoe guy, but he, you know, he had something he did with World Autism Day because he has a son who's autistic. Steph Curry partnered with the Bruce Lee Foundation to auction off a pair of, what is he on, the Curry, what number is he on now? Four, Curry. Five, eight? And... Close. And so I'm like, 4 or 5. I'm like, where is he at on those now? And you know, he auctioned those off, right, for and uses his money to stop sort of all the violence we're seeing against Asian Americans happening, particularly here in this country. Like, what are you seeing around athletes, and like, what are those conversations like that they have with the brands when they want to do things like that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I usually talk about this angle of it just probably to justify that what I do is worthwhile, because obviously writing about sneakers sounds ridiculous to most people, but I like to say that, you know, sneakers are a portal to a lot of these guys' personality, you know, whether that's people in their life or where they're from or different themes that they, you know, want to celebrate. And so a lot of guys, I would say to me, the McFly Hyper Dunk, the South Beach LeBron 8, Galaxy Foams, like that whole era really kind of started the storytelling chapter of where we're at. And I think a lot of guys are super invested into making sure they have strong stories to share. So, you know, I think we kind of went from an era where 90s, 2000s, like the first handful of shoes for everybody's line was just their team colors and the home version, away version. And we've advanced past that by a lot. So, you know, there was a great colorway that Damian Lillard worked on to launch his Dame 7. And that was basically taking the royalties of that shoe and launching what's called the Visionary Academy. Like an internship program for high school students. And you mentioned Steph and you know, some other ones that have come out as well. So I think every brand's kind of looking at that as how can we not make this such a transactional launch and see, you know, what can be some storytelling behind it. And it's exciting because I think, you know, whether it's Jordan Brand and other brands as well, like how much they're pledging to the Black community or what we've seen with Steph in terms of the Asian community support, like, all of these things are kind of outside of basketball in theory, but not really when you look at who's the demographic of who's always been influencing the culture and impacting things as well. So it's been a great trend to see. And I think everybody now is looking for how they can make an impact.
Oh, I love that. And I know you posted before too, even just about the Adidas Pencils program. And we had Jazz on recently as well to talk more about that. I think just looking ahead at the next generation of not just talent, but sneakers, what are you looking to see? What do you think is the white space that brands should be targeting, and where are we going from here?
Man, that's a tough one. if I knew, I'd have a billion-dollar consulting contract.
what do you want to see?
I think the pencil program in particular, and that's probably the most exciting thing, not just seeing how it's, you know, still looking ahead, but already what we're seeing in terms of what they've accomplished in 10 years. You know, I first met Dwayne Edwards in 2006. I was like basically a gopher at Soul Collector. So they had me drive 2 hours to hold like this, like reflector thing in the background of a photo shoot with Dwayne. And I got some Burger King after and then drove back. But all the guys at Soul Collector, that actually went a long ways because they were like, all right, he's willing to like do whatever to get in, you know? And I remember talking to Dwayne about the 21 and, you know, he kind of said like, I'm going to retire in 5 years, open a sneaker design school and change the way that basically all these design teams look at companies, you know, in terms of demographics. And literally like, and I'm just like, oh, that sounds amazing. Okay. And I think I got to look at the timeline because it was almost to the exact like month mark that he did that. He left his Jordan design director job at Jordan Brand and launched Pencil. And I want to say they've placed over, you know, 300 students from all around the world at all these different brands. So that's been amazing. And it's been an impact for over 10 years. And I think now he's getting that much more brand involvement, too, to make sure that they really have a pipeline of not only giving people job access once they're actually talented and ready to get hired, but also like inspiring 10-year-olds to realize that could be something they could even do and starting at a younger age to really get their skills sharpened. So to me, that's one of the craziest things to see is just the impact that's had and how kind of matter of factly Dwayne said he was going to do it.
He did it.
You know, it's like one of my favorite stories I've you know, seen in this industry take place and unfold. So I think that piece is going to be huge. And then the thing that is going to be interesting just from a basketball standpoint is what happens with the NCAA, what happens with this Overtime Elite League they're launching, and how all the levels of hoops kind of become intertwined, whether that's USA Basketball taking over, how that looks. And I know you mentioned earlier how nobody really sits and watches a game the way that they used to, and mm-hmm. and things like that. And I think all of those levels of basketball kind of shifting, there could be a new way that you actually watch the game too, that comes in there. So I think that's where the next decade is going to be pretty interesting to see, and what the future of hoops really looks like.
Well, you just hit on the future, and I think a great way to sort of end this segment is talk about the now. What do you hope the sneaker game on the boardroom is going to be? We obviously know they're going to have amazing guests, of course, starting with some 7-foot sniper. But what's the goal with the sneaker game? What do you want that platform to be?
Yeah, I think I've always looked at it as, you know, celebrating great design, great stories. And I think more so from a sports business standpoint, like talking to all the people that have, you know, the biggest sneaker deals, and just like how they build their brand, how they view their brand. I think that's really what we centered on with Kevin in that first conversation. It's, you know, how do you build a roadmap of a signature business? How do you, you know, see your marketing and your branding really living as your career unfolds? And so we're going to have guys like KD, who's, you know, he's only one of the three players in league history that's hitting number 14 for a sneaker line, along with LeBron and of course MJ, while playing. And so that's, you know, something that made us both feel pretty old. But then we're also going to have kind of the next generation, the up and coming, you know, players and stars like Sabrina, you know, some other people like that as well. So trying to hit it from both ends and really kind of talk through what the sneaker business looks like, and not so much the most hype and most kind of expensive sneakers and that whole angle of it, but more so just the richest stories. And I'm excited to see it kick off.
No, that's great. We're going to be looking forward to that. No, that should be really good. Well, folks, stay tuned, because you know what's coming next. America's favorite segment, Shoe and Tell, presented by Another Lane. Stay tuned. What's good, everybody? We're back. And you know what time it is. America's favorite segment, Shoe and Tell, presented by Another Lane, the premier digital marketplace for dope kicks. You know, Adina and Chad are two of our favorite people, obviously, because we talk about them every week and all the time. And listen, I also want you guys to think about this. These two started a business in the middle of a pandemic. Like, I mean, that's baller, man. And not only are they rock stars and they are getting funding from various sources and their platform is growing by leaps and bounds, these are people who are genuinely into and care about the sneaker industry and are in it for the right reasons, right? Like, you want to find that exclusive rare pair, you need some history. I told you, Chad, history lesson. Just sit down. Give yourself some time, though, because, I mean, you're going to need like an hour, hour and a half, like, because he's really going to give it to you, which is, listen, if you need a loan, you need to know. If you want to sell your shoes, if you want to not deal with seller fees, oh, anotherlane.com is a place you need to go. Of course, if you want to find dope content like Shoe and Tell, you can also go to anotherlane.com. There's so many exciting things happen there. I really want you guys to check them out. Anotherlane.com. Now, of course, the moment you all are waiting for, Nick DiPaolo is going to show off some kicks. Let us know, Nick. Show us what you got.
All right. So let's hop back into the shoe that got me into shoes, the Zoom Flight 95.
That's your, Gabby, you love it. That's your jam.
I'm blushing. Look at the lights adjusting.
This is a perfect shoe. Like, this is just an incredible shoe. I've always loved shoes with the black upper, with a white midsole, white outsole. My brother, for Christmas one year, got me a painting of the shoe, which was pretty awesome, and that sits in my office as well. And you know, I was a huge Jason Kidd fan growing up. This was his shoe that he wore, of course, and was the headliner for. Mm-hmm. And then you had like Terrell Brandon, mm-hmm. Tim Hardaway, a bunch of guys that also wore it. But I always thought it was just like the fastest, futuristic looking shoe. I think it's been 26 years, which makes me feel pretty old, but they still look futuristic now. The materials were incredible, and Eric Avard designed them. And this was the first shoe I noticed where, you know, I realized there was a lot more going into the product design element than just some of the other basketball shoes at that time coming into the early 90s. So I didn't have a pair growing up. I had a $40 budget. And the shoe I did have was the Thrill Flight.
Oh, yeah.
Which was the Takedown.
Yes.
These just showed up this morning. I finally got another pair. I've been looking for a pair for like 20 years.
Nice.
This was the color that Reggie Miller wore. Gary Payton had an all-white with green accents one, And then Mitch Richmond, who was my other favorite player growing up in Sacramento, he wore the black with the white contrast stitch and the gold accents. And that was the color I had. I had that black pair. So I had them. I got them from JCPenney for $58, chipped in $18 since I had a $40 budget at the time. And I've been trying to find a black pair ever since. I don't know if I will, but it's one of those shoes you just hunt forever for.
Yeah, man. So
we'll see. But this, to me, it's funny because side by side, like the Thrill Flight is pretty weak compared to the Zoom Flight.
But bubble detail, though.
A bubble, yeah, they, yeah.
Because these have the molded bubble, you know, on the side and the shank, and then the Thrill Flight doesn't. But I always, it's funny, I tried to, like, carve a blurb bubble on my pair to try to make them look like the Zoom Flight back in the day. But I wore, it was a size 9.5 in the black pair. I wore those things everywhere. The whole outsole was like, literally the foam was like exposed. Like I wore them to death. And that was my first ever pair of Nikes. So
I love it.
It's pretty amazing to get a pair of Thrill Flights back.
Nick, really quick, one of the cool things you've mentioned, and I know that kids who, you know, like me, like you on a budget, your parents are like, you got $40, you got $50, that's it. Marshalls, JCPenney's, all those sort of like, for lack of a better term, like discounted department stores, those are where you find them, because they always get the stuff handed down, and most people who go to those stores ain't looking for hot Nike shoes. You start digging in the piles, you're like, ooh, look what I found.
Yeah, growing up, I mean, East Bay called it discontinued style, and that was in like the bold italics, but like I didn't mind if it was old, because it was, you know, something on sale at that point, and so I never had like stuff currently as it had just released. But if it was a year or two old and at Ross Marshall's, like I was finding some crazy stuff still. So, you know, sometimes you had, I think it was called like irregular. It would have like the irregular sticker if like some stitching was messed up, basically like a B grade. But I was still finding like some awesome stuff back in the day. I found some Answer Ones for $50.
See, gems.
Shaking Destructs for $19.99. You know, I was finding all kinds of heat that, to me, was great and exciting, because I was still able to get, a sneaker that I would feel excited and proud to wear, you know, even if it wasn't $150. So it was a fun time to grow up, for sure. I
love that. Everybody gives a nod to the East Bay catalog, too. That was like everyone. One time.
Everyone.
I literally read East Bay every morning with my cereal.
it's like that was your newspaper.
Yeah, and I would read, like, there was a stretch, I can't claim this anymore, but I used to memorize like the weights, because they would list the weights. I would know the tech that every shoe had. I was reading about the volleyball section, like everything. I was reading it front to back. And I told somebody at East Bay that whole story. Like when I was at Soul Collector, we got to do write for the 25th anniversary issue of theirs, which was like a cool moment for me. And I always joke, I'm like, East Bay and then Kicks Magazine, that's how I learned about sneakers, really.
I love it.
Just reading up all the details.
Love it.
My next pair is the LeBron 2 Oregon. I went to Oregon, and I was in school when these were given to the team. And I've always heard there's around 40 pairs of the green, and then of the white green as well. So it's a pretty rare one, but it's also a shoe I just always wanted to get. And this one, let's see, we had a class called Info Hell. In the J school, and so it was a 100-page paper that you spend the whole term on. And my topic was if college athletes should get paid or not, which is obviously funny because it's been 15 years ago. And the season had just ended. I turned in my projects, and I went and paid a kid $500 on the team for his pair. I'm not incriminating anybody, because he was done at the school, so he didn't have any eligibility left. The other kids couldn't sell their pairs, but I was able to buy one pair for $500, and then I found a home and away set on eBay like 2 years later that I spent my entire month's salary on. eight spots every morning for that month.
I love it.
I've always loved the LeBron 2. I think it's one of the greatest designs, both just as a design, but also like it's an amazing hoop shoe. And so once Oregon had the LeBron 2 PEs, this was like one of the first PEs I got my hands on. I was super excited to get. So just a great sneaker I still like. And it was funny because when PJ Tucker was playing the Blazers last year, he wore the Oregon LeBron 2s, and that was actually my pair. So that was kind of cool. you know, I kind of lent him. He actually still has him. I got to get him back. But I lent him for that game, and he wore him up here in Oregon, so that was pretty fun.
He's like, I got to get him back.
Just don't make him put it on eBay as a buy now option for you.
No chance. I can't. I don't want to buy those twice. And then my other favorite shoe is I was 13 years old when the KB8s came out, Kobe's first Adidas signature shoe. Mm-hmm. Literally all I asked for my birthday that year was a pair of KB8s. That's all I wanted. And instead I got a TV, like a little miniature, like 13-inch TV, which lasted me all through high school. I also had it in my dorm room my freshman year. So it was obviously a practical gift, but I was pissed. Like I've never was more mad opening up a gift than that. Like my mom was like yelling at me later because, you know, I was telling my grandpa that's all I wanted. And so I ended up finding an original pair of the All-Star MSG colorway that he wore against Michael, you know, in that All-Star game when they had that great kind of battle. I know the black-white is, of course, you know, what everybody thinks of for the KB8s probably, but this one to me was great just with the
purple.
With the 8 stitching, and then it is a size 14. I'm a 13-14, and I would always buy Kobe's in a 14, like later on, because that was his size. And so this was still one of my favorites. I've probably worn these only like 5-6 times, but these, and then I also got a pair of top 10 2010s, which was the shoe he wore his rookie year.
Yep.
These have never been retroed. These are from 96 and still look pretty damn good. And I don't know if we'll see what happens with Adidas. I don't know if they're going to be able to retro, you know, some of the Kobe stuff or not now going forward. So if not, this is a cool one to have that. I don't think most people maybe remember this shoe necessarily, and kids definitely today don't even realize that he was with Adidas at all.
Yeah.
Let alone this shoe. But to me, this was always an awesome design, and that whole Feet You Wear era was just like wavy and fun and crazy. And for Adidas' sense, kind of a way that they stuck out, you know, compared to Nike and other brands. It was pretty unique to them. So this was a cool shoe I've always thought was pretty sleek. And it's fun looking back at like his rookie season, some of the game shots of him wearing these and kind of the style he played with at that time.
Mm-hmm. It also reminiscent of sort of the 17 button super extra 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 large baggy suits that were worn at that time, right? I think they kind of like run in tandem.
The ones that are in Space Jam too, right?
Yeah, oh boy, ones? Here we go.
I mean, the style of that time was just incredible.
It was wild. It was wild.
We did a 2003 party in January for my friend Trey's birthday, and it was like people had on velours. It was incredible.
It was a wild time, man.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm kind of glad that we're a little bit in a different era now, right? I think it's like, okay, let's kind of wear clothes a little bit more form-fitting and, you know, save some of that fabric.
I think that might be why basketball shoes, you know, sales-wise are declining too. It's just like a bulky basketball shoe doesn't necessarily fit with all this, like, kind of more tailored era. But, but you know, it's been fun to look back at it. And I remember, like, distinct outfits that are hilarious and terrible from back then, but you know, that was the time.
There were some bad ones.
A bucket hat and call it a day.
Literally a bucket hat and like a, you know, a 10X shirt, and it's like, oh, it's like, what?
I want to say they were called the Jordan Trenner Condos. I don't know if you remember those.
No.
They had like these two buckle straps, and there was a cool gray colorway that I had with literally like a 3X full like sleeve. Like head to toe joint, and then I had, because that was the dark gray was the fleece outfit.
Oh,
and I had a light gray Jordan headband to kind of connect it all together, and that was my game day fit for the bus for high school games.
I love it, the game day fit.
If there's a picture of that, please send it to us. Yes, we might have to do it as like a throwback.
Yep.
Unfortunately, there's not. I still had those shoes. Actually, I just recently tossed them because they were beat. But I have tons of sneakers still from like high school, middle school days. But we were very fortunate to live in a time where the style was terrible, but also iPhones weren't out yet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine?
No social media
Man, because those, you get roasted and flamed. Repeat. It's like, oh, let's just pull this up again. Get memed. Everything.
I mean, there's photos of like people with, what were they called, the stutter shades?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that I think was like the first era of like embarrassing outfits caught on camera type situations. And we were lucky to kind of miss that whole
window. Well, as
we
I said,
trying, like, I was literally thinking of like the and one shirt that like just didn't have the right sleeve, but had the left sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
Just the dumb stuff that went.
You see, Gabby, it's one of the advantages of being in this age range that we're in. No camera phones, all that fun stuff back in middle school, high school, because yikes.
But yikes in the best way, though. I'm not gonna lie. My parents sold the house we grew up in, and I was like, let me put on literally everything I was never allowed to wear. And I wasn't allowed to put posters on the wall. So I had like an Eminem 8 Mile poster on, like, let me tell you. So I turned out very different than I think my Jewish parents would have liked. Like, I had pink wallpaper with like carousel horses. And I was like, why would we redo this room when you can buy me things like every color of Adidas pants instead? So that was like the trade off growing up. Going back a couple years ago, I was like, I gotta put on like my old school Rangers jersey, bucket hat, Limp Bizkit and 8 Mile poster on the wall, and I was like, let me hold up all my other jerseys now. From we don't really know.
But the real question is, did you have puka shells?
Absolutely.
Had puka shells. I can be proud to say I never had Abercrombie. I never had puka shells. Like, there was a distinct, like,
oh yeah, Abercrombie, that was a vibe, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Cross the tips on the hair, like, luckily didn't go down that route.
What a time to be alive. What a time. Well, Nick, this was fun, man. Where can the people find you if they want to keep track of you on social and all your work?
Yeah, so Instagram and Twitter is just at Nick DiPaola. You know, I've been at ESPN now for 4 years, and a lot of our sneaker coverage all shifted this last year to theundefeated.com. Mm-hmm. So you can check me out there. Aaron Dodson as well, who's mm-hmm. my personal favorite person to read about sneakers. He's way more in depth and probably a better writer than me. So I always try to give him a shot too, because he's great. And
Aaron's good
too. And so I think, you know, that's the main places. And then of course, Boardroom for the Sneaker Game, that'll be dropping sometime in mid-April here, coming soon. And you'll be able to find that across all Boardroom platforms as well as YouTube.
Awesome, man. We appreciate it. And folks, you of course know where to find us. We are part of the Count the Things family. Find us on the BombCop podcast feed. So you're going to find the original, the OG show. You're going to have Woke Bros. You're going to have Crazy Sexy Cool. And of course us. And you're going to have Rap Games. You're going to have Grown Up the Same with Trey. It's just all dope shows on the Bomb podcast feed. And of course, you know where to find us, at Kicks and Shit Show on social media on all available platforms. And we'll see you next time. Peace.